You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Tonight's theme, Full Circle. Amazing stories about ending up exactly where you got started. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, it's no secret that there are some major ongoing changes in the American labor market. Automation is changing the nature of a lot of jobs and making others obsolete. And manufacturing jobs for many people are giving way to service work in fields like retail and healthcare, often with lower pay.
And as we heard last week from a UW economist, wages are going in two directions. People at the top of the scale with higher levels of education are seeing increases in pay, while people with no education past high school are seeing stagnant wages over time. And if people at the lower end want to make more money, the only answer is to work more jobs and longer hours.
Our next guests say we need to rethink the work week and salaries in the American economy with a goal of working fewer hours for more money. Dorothy Sue Cobble is a distinguished professor of labor studies and history at Rutgers University. Dorothy Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
And Michael Merrill is with us. He's a professor of professional practice and LEARN director at the Rutgers Labor Education Center. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Nice to be here.
Well, Dorothy Sue, I want to start with the opening line of a piece that you wrote. This is a couple years back. You started, "Most Americans work too much and are paid too little." Can you spell that out for us?
Well, I think most of us know that we're working longer hours. And as you said in your introduction, certainly some people are making a lot more money, but most of us, wages are stagnating, and we're having to work harder just to stay in place.
And Michael, what's led to that trend over time?
Well, I mean, it's basically the decline in the bargaining power of wage earners, and that bargaining power obviously is both a function of organization and structure of the labor market. I also think what's important here is that actually the link between work and income has been separated for a long time, ever since actually the Industrial Revolution, or at least the rise of corporate forms and complex organizations. And the power and relations in the labor market just haven't kept up with those changes. We're making people work very hard for very little money, and some people work hardly at all for a lot.
Dorothy Sue, what would be some of the things that might turn that trend around? Have we seen actually changes over time where maybe that was less true?
You know, one of the things that's often said is, well, Americans work much longer hours than people in other countries because that's just the way we are. You know, we work harder. And I think that's one way of thinking about a work ethic, that, you know, we're hard workers. But a shorter hours movement that was a very American movement that actually affected American policy as well as European believed that there was a different kind of work ethic, that Americans should be paid fairly for the work they do, and their work time should be valued. So one of the things I've written about is how we haven't always had long hours and low pay, that we changed that situation 100 years ago, and we can do it again.
And Dorothy Sue, you mentioned European countries. How do we stack up with other developed countries when it comes to the amount of time we work and how much we get paid for it?
Well, probably many of your listeners are aware that we're one of the few countries in the world that does not have a paid parental leave policy. These kinds of policies are very common around the world. The norm is really 3 months of paid leave. That's the world norm. But you take more advanced industrial countries, you know, that are more our counterparts, like Germany and Sweden, places like that. They have much better policies that address work time. Germany, one example, they have 6 weeks of mandated vacation time. And, you know, I should just emphasize that this doesn't make them less productive. It makes them more productive. We work about 1,400 hours a year. They work about 1,400 hours a year. We work about 1,800. And they are producing just as much or more.
So, Michael, how do we get there from here? You mentioned briefly labor organization earlier. Is that part of the story? We don't have the unions, the organized labor we once did?
Well, that's certainly part of the story. I think also it's important to get our heads around the larger structural changes that we need. I mean, I've come to think that we treat unemployment not as the public scandal it should be, that we need to treat unemployment as a public health emergency and respond to any case of unemployment the same way we would respond to a case of cholera. We'd cure it. We'd make sure that the system worked so it didn't happen. And there are ways of doing that. If we can eliminate, I think, job blackmail, what I would call job blackmail, we increase the bargaining power of individual workers, whether or not they're in a union. Unions are essential to get those kinds of changes. They're essential to bargain in large organizations. But obviously, unionization has fallen quite sharply, and much of our bargaining power individual is a function of the structure of the market, which is what I think we need to change.
Talking to Michael Merrill and Dorothy Sue Cobble, both from Rutgers University, looking at the future of work. They say many of us work too long, too many hours, don't get paid enough for doing that. We should get paid more and work less. Michael, you mentioned labor blackmail. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean job blackmail. Many people take work longer hours than they want to because they are forced to work those hours to make the money they need to live the life that they're told every time they turn on the television or listen to the radio they're supposed to live. When the shorter hour movement started in the labor movement in the 19th century, Ira Stewart was sort of the godfather of the movement, had this slogan, shorten your day and raise your pay. And what he, among the other things that he meant to capture there, was that people who don't work long hours have a whole host of other needs and are deserving of more money to support those needs, education, leisure, and political. And I would say that if you look actually at the structure of pay in large organizations, at least every time I've asked wage earners this question, the link between your contribution to getting the product or service out the door and your pay is often skewed. We need to have a whole different set of pay systems. And if people can walk away from a bad job at a bad pay because there's another one available for them, we'd get there.
And Dorothy Sue, Michael is mentioning unemployment. Would having all of us work fewer hours make for more employment? And if instead of one person working 70 hours a week, two people are working 35 hours a week?
Right. I've written a lot about the early labor movement in the 19th and early 20th century. And one of the leaders, Sam Gompers, often said that the hours of labor are too long as one person is out of work. And for the labor movement at that point, shorter hours they saw as a solution not just to overwork, but to underwork, that some people were working too long and some people were not working enough. So you really needed to think about redistributing time as well as redistributing money.
We're talking to Dorothy Sue Cobble and Michael Merrill at Rutgers University, looking at the future of work and labor in the American economy. They say one of our main goals should be to have shorter hours, fewer hours in the work week and the work year, and better pay, especially for workers in lower paying jobs.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the case our guests are making? Do you think this could happen? If you're working in a lower paying service sector job, tell us your story. What kind of hours do you work? What's the pay like? And what are the challenges? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up a conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about the future of work. Our guests say we should rethink our economy and aim for shorter hours and higher pay, especially for workers at the lowest end of the pay scale. Dorothy Sue Cobble and Michael Merrill are with us from Rutgers University.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you see a need for some kind of labor organizing for lower paid service sector jobs? Do you think we should rethink the work week, how long it should be, what we get paid? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. While I'm sympathetic to the view, and Henry Ford famously said, you know, if you don't pay your workers enough to buy the product, your workers are not going to buy your product. So you need to have your workers paid appropriately for the work they do. But at what point does the worker outprice himself from the job? An example would be if we gave everyone in the fast food restaurant business $20 an hour, so to speak, at what point does the fast food franchise, you know, put in kiosks so that they're the ones taking the orders because people are going to demand cheaper food rather than the more expensive burger?
Charlie, thanks a lot for that call. An interesting point, Dorothy Sue, the idea that either if wages go up too much, A, the small business person, in this case, the franchise owner, couldn't stay in business, or it gives them an incentive to join the wave of automation, and then we don't have enough jobs again.
Right. Yes, certainly, I suppose there's a point you could reach at which people are overpaid. I don't think we've reached that yet. When people are working full-time and working hard and still can't make enough money to support themselves and their families, and we have extreme inequalities of wealth so that a few people are really making enormous money, and that is not trickling down. I think we've seen profits go up. I think there's room for redistribution of some of those profits. I also think when people are paid more, it's actually better for everybody. It spurs the economy. It spurs growth. And it's a win-win situation.
Brian, Charlie, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Brian on the line in Milwaukee. Brian, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I think her point about the wage inequality is spot on, but I'm a union worker out of Milwaukee, and I'm a sewer worker, actually, and there are days when I'm down in a hole dealing with other people's poop and everything else that goes through the line, and there's days I think I can't possibly make enough money to justify doing this, but yet I have no choice because I have three kids at home. I have to go home and feed. And then, but the reason I was mainly calling is I've been in the union for about 20 years, and I always thought that when I got in, I was told that union workers are a higher caliber of worker, and you're getting the best quality for your work. And just in the last few years, I've really seen that going downhill. I've got people that, you know, they criticize me for being union, saying that, oh, you're overpaid, and you're causing else to go up, and the price of sewer and water is directly because you make too much money, which I just don't see. I see people running the companies making millions of dollars, you know, profits wise, but yet paying us less and less every year. And then to me, these people come after me like it's my fault, and they can't even comprehend what I do for a living, but yet they degrade me for it. You know, how? At what point did that become, I mean, is this something that's been going on for years? I mean, I'm not even 40 yet, so I really can't tell what happened, you know, when the labor movement first kicked in.
And Brian, I'll jump in, and Michael, let's bring you in on this. Brian sees labor unions becoming more and more of a dirty word. Is this a new trend or something that we've been working toward for a while?
Well, it's been a trend for a while, obviously, but there have been ups and downs. I mean, the problem, we are in a sort of a downward vicious spiral, and it's very hard to solve the problem in one place without solving it everywhere. I mean, one of the images that I often use is that we have started to organize our society like a game of musical chairs, and we purposely don't have enough chairs. And some people with ringside seats, you know, that some of which they're already reserved for them, they get to laugh at the rest of us who fight and claw to get the few that are left. And until we change that basic structural fact, we will engender these kinds of resentments. We'll engender desperate people trying to think of all these solutions, and I think we'll be in a downward spiral. There are solutions. I mean, we have had historical experience where, with full employment, when we were motivated to employ everybody who wanted to work in World War II, prices rose, but wages rose. Real wages climbed steeply from 1939 to 1945, and kept going up for the next 10 or 15 years because we jump-started a virtuous cycle of growth. And we've now fallen into a vicious cycle of decline, and the only way to fix it is to jumpstart a new virtuous cycle of growth, which will take massive spending, which the people with money are reluctant to do, but we'll all be better off.
Brian, thanks for that call. We're talking to Michael Merrill and Dorothy Sue Cobble from Rutgers University, looking at the future of work. They say, in a nutshell, Americans work too many hours and don't get paid enough for it. They'd like to reverse that equation. Back to your calls now with Fawn on the line in Platteville. Fawn, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I just had a comment. You know, a lot of people now, even if you're either a single parent or it's a dual income, if you're not on a higher paid job, you still have to pay daycare. So even if you're making X amount of dollars an hour, you still have to pay X amount of hours for your child because it's not easy to have just a single income to cover all the bills.
Fawn, thanks for the call. Dorothy Sue, the cost of children for people trying to work while raising children.
Right. One of the things I've written about is what I call the other women's movement. There have been a lot of different women's movements in the U.S. We celebrate the suffrage movement for political rights, but there was also a long women's movement to raise pay. Women are still the lowest paid workers. They're two-thirds of all minimum wage workers. And they're increasingly single heads of families, so they're supporting themselves and their children. And one of the things the women's movement pushed for in the past, and I think we're seeing increasingly organizations pushing for this and achieving some of these things today, are better social supports for parents. Like other countries with paid parental leave, but also social supports for after school programs and kindergarten and other ways of helping caregivers who have to take care of children and increasingly the elderly.
Thanks a lot for the call, Fawn. I wanted to ask about this transition, more and more service-type jobs. A lot of these jobs, just staying with the issue of women, Dorothy Sue, a lot of them are traditionally thought of as women. Healthcare, retail service-type jobs, lower regarded in some cases, lower paid in many cases. Do we need to change an attitude of the kind of work people are doing to be worth this kind of reward?
Yes. I think one of the things that's really troubling to me is I'm in my 60s, and when I grew up in a world in which it seemed that the work people did, whether it was blue-collar, manual, care work, was valued. And now, increasingly, we seem to have a world where only a few jobs are valued, that one has to be white-collar, professional, and other jobs are not as valued. And I think how we think about work does matter in terms of how we pay and value it. So public attitudes really do matter in terms of service
wages. I think also those jobs have been underpaid in part because of discrimination. Who does those jobs? Their roots in notions that this is the kind of work that was done for free in the home. It was part of a gift economy, and those skills were seen as natural and not valued. So it's a very complicated problem. It's also a really important problem because more and more people do those jobs, and we're not going to see more general prosperity and wage equality until we start revaluing that work.
That's all the time we have for now. Dorothy Sue, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Michael, thanks to you as well for being with us.
Sure, Rob. Thank you.
We've been talking to Dorothy Sue Cobble, Distinguished Professor of Labor Studies and History at Rutgers University, and Michael Merrill, Professor of Professional Practice at the Rutgers Labor Education Center, looking at the future of work, the hours we work, what we get paid for them. Still time for you to share your thoughts and your experiences over at the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.